This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues that's him. It's gonna get you some in the
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Souther Teague. My co-host Damon Bolte is off in California. But that's okay. He's living the good life out in Cali, and I'm living the New York life here in the rain and the humidity. But today, a couple special guests in the studio that are going to make up for that lost voice. We got Rocky Ye, who is the... I remember the one word, chaise.
Gardien de chaise.
Gardien de chaise, the guardian of the cellars at Maison Ferrand. And then Donnie Ronan, owner of Academia in Austin that opened on the Ides of March of this year. It's a new bar. And he's also, and no one got stabbed that day. And he's also, are you a founding member over there at Unlimited Liabilities?
Yes, my partner and I.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool. So two, you know, stalwarts of our business happened to be in town and decided to come join me on the show today. Welcome to the studio, guys.
Thanks for the pizza.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Actually, the watermelon salad.
Okay.
End of summer. You got to get that watermelon salad in when you can. Rocky, you've been in and around this business for a long time.
Yeah, some days feels a lot longer than others.
But you made what I'm finding more and more of these interviews that I do, somewhat common jump. You were in tech, mm-hmm. right, before this. What made you make the leap from tech to this, other than the obvious lure of drinking alcohol and having a good time all the time?
That was a pretty huge part of it. I was at a point in my life I was just ready for a change. And tech was kind of a stopping point. I'd gotten out of medicine and went into tech to, you know, just to pay the bills for a while. And then, you know, 2008 came along and, you know, the economy crashed and budgets were being, you know, slashed left and right. Mm-hmm. And the handwriting on the wall, I mean, I was working for the University of Washington at the time. And it's like, well, why do you, you know, why work for the state when you get paid less and you work almost as many hours as, it's like, oh, well, you know, there's things like other benefits and, but those are going away. I was like, all right, well, then I'll take that voluntary layoff and, you know, see what else is out there. And lo and behold.
What was your first foray into the spirits industry?
Vessel.
Oh. Yeah. I was Jim Romdahl's unpaid intern barback. And the funniest part about that is there were a lot of people in town who were upset about why couldn't they be Jim's unpaid intern barback. I was like, really? There's a competition for this?
It's a coveted position.
Yeah.
The unpaid intern barback.
I want to get yelled at and not paid.
In 2008.
Right.
Wow. And you stuck with it. That's the crazy part.
Right.
He didn't drive you. He didn't dash your hopes and dreams of being in this business. And he, in fact, sort of somehow lit a fire under you.
No, I mean, that, and you know, he and I are very similar kind of crazy. So, you know, it worked.
Sounds like a sweet relationship.
I'll have to compare notes on the crazy that you two are later. So you intern barbacked for Jim
mm-hmm.
for how long?
Let's see. So, overall, probably like two and a half years at Vessel, you know, altogether. And then I made all sorts of weird jumps. I got a gig opening and managing a restaurant and doing their bar. And
so you went from unpaid intern barback to manager of new restaurant
right,
bar program.
Right. And, you know...
So, and suffice to say, an unusual track.
Right. It was just one of those things where it's like, wow, you have no idea until you do it how just far over your head you are. And then the moment you make that leap, you're like, I'm screwed.
Yeah, I mean, I was I was asked to be an instructor when I was a chef. I was asked to be an instructor at the New England Culinary Institute up in Montpelier, Vermont. And I took the job and I realized, wow, these students coming into class are really smart. Mm-hmm. But I realized pretty quickly, if I was just one day ahead of them, I was God.
Right.
As long as I'm one day of information ahead of you, I know everything. So that first year, I was there for 2 years. That first year was a scramble.
Oh, yeah.
So I can imagine the same thing, right? You're just trying there was that, to keep your head above water.
Yeah, that's exactly, like when I was in college and I was a math and science tutor, I was tutoring classes I hadn't taken yet. So I was like in the book like the day before.
Yeah.
My students too.
Yeah, exactly.
I went backwards on that in high school and in tutoring predominantly math. It actually helped me on the SAT because it was stuff that we hadn't done for 2 years already.
Right.
The questions they were asking. And I was like, oh, that's pretty helpful.
Mm-hmm. Danny, how'd you get your start in our field?
I was mostly unpaid intern for Jim Romdahl, but
the connection is made.
Yeah. I started a wait a second. We can say shits and giggles on the show.
You say whatever you want.
Oh, fantastic.
This is
a
subscription show right here.
Awesome.
We're live on the air though right now.
I hope that all five subscribers really enjoy this. It's going to be great. I was doing sort of for shits and giggles on the side. I was also in IT, and wow. And I just
the parallels are striking.
One of my dearest friends, and the Jews and the Chinese. I mean,
right.
if we didn't invent it, they did. And, you know, that whole thing.
And we do each other's taxes.
Exactly.
You'll
exactly.
basically eat anything.
Yeah. Right. Are you going to use that part of the animal? Okay.
Okay.
Great.
Cool. I'll take it.
Yeah. I had always loved wine. Like one of my best friends, her dad was a longtime editor for Bon Appetit, Wine and Spirits mm-hmm. Editor, and introduced me to wine at a point that like I didn't even like alcohol. I mean, my parents didn't drink growing up, and was never like really introduced to anything, much less things that were great. And so I jumped a lot of steps just by trying that. But he wasn't. Although he liked, you know, fancy things, he was very sort of like feet on the ground and, you know, we talked a lot about like tasting and what that actually means. And honestly, like I became, incensed one time. I was in DC and there was we just had an experience with a Somm who's just kind of an asshole and defeated the entire purpose of being the Somm, which is he's supposed to be that gateway between the guest and the product. I mean, I don't want to say glorified salespeople because there's a lot of knowledge and experience that goes into being a really great Somm. But really, it's to let me figure out who you are and guide you to the thing that's best for you.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
If you want to upsell once in a while, that's fine. This guy was very bad at his job. And also, as someone who had very limited knowledge at that time, I was, you know, 22, very limited knowledge. I was like, why do I know that he's bullshitting?
Right, right. You can smell it on him.
Yeah, I'm like, I shouldn't know that, right? And so that was the kind of thing where we just started creating these experiences for people who predominantly, I mean, at the time, just wine, where we would like either put together, you know, a wine tour based on an actual like grape variety or on a region that made sense. We weren't like drinking Cab at 11 a.m., which you see often in, you know, in Northern California. And that's really okay. I'm like, it should be something where you're not intimidated to ask for something based on what you know. And if you don't know that much, no big deal. As long as you can express what it is that you like, it doesn't matter if you don't even know the names of the grapes. You're like, I had this brand one time and I really liked it. And it was, you know, is super fruity and big, but you know, dry finish, just something like a descriptor to allow the person to put them in the seat of, enjoyment.
Sure. Yeah. Any clues you can give me, I can guide you from there.
Yeah. And anyone who's worth their, you know, their salt, they can easily do that.
Yeah, the target is huge. I can get you something you're going to like.
Yeah.
Next time you come in, now we've got to build some trust together. Maybe I can get you something that's a little outside your comfort zone. Following time, maybe I can really push you to try something you may not have ever even thought of. But based on what I know of you, we'll build a rapport, and that way I can understand that you, even though you've never even thought of this, you'll like it.
Well, and the key word that you said is trust. And this was an era where the Somm was like up here and the guest was down here.
Yeah.
And that's a great way to break trust and to like, you know, put people off of wine. They're like, you know what? Screw it. I'm just going to have a beer. I'm just going to have like, just give me a shot of something.
Yeah. I think, you know, one of the things that, that maybe doesn't get taught enough is that there's definitely a time for upselling. There's also a time for downselling.
Yeah.
There's a time to say, this kid's 23. I'm going to sell him something a little bit cheaper just to get him in the water.
Yeah.
I don't need to push him to this expensive, exalted bottle that he's not going to understand or appreciate.
Johnny Walker Blue and Coke, bro.
Hey, man, why not? Yeah. I mean, whatever you want, right?
You got it, flaunt it.
Yeah. I mean, so the thing is my buddies and I at the time, you know, we started like out by drinking wine mostly as well, but we were 18 and 19.
I skipped that step altogether.
Hold on a second. That's not legal.
Yeah. So what
in
we
this
figured,
country.
Right. Well, what we figured out when we were living in the dorms was, you know who doesn't card? Fancy wine shops.
That's true, right?
So we every month we would figure out the schedule of like of their ad tastings and go to their ad tastings. And we're like, yeah, we're just going to get, you know, at first it was just like, we're going to go drink a bunch of wine and you know, catch a buzz before we go party. And
like, I thought he was going to say before we go to class.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I did too. Yeah, I was waiting for it. I was like, what time are these guys doing their tastings?
Right. But yeah, and it's like, yeah. So, and you know, they don't card and look, and oh my God, there's 40 wines to try. Let's do them all. And
Heritage Radio Network nor the Speakeasy condones the act of underage drinking. Yeah, go ahead, Ricky.
And you know, we like inadvertently like gave ourselves a wine education.
Right, and you were probably going in there, getting your free samples, and then buying some cheap bottle on the way out.
Right.
Because they trusted you enough, thinking that you were there. Oh, this guy came to us. Oh, he must be old enough. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
That's it. I skipped that step entirely. I still, to this day, don't really understand wine at all. I didn't start drinking until I was 22 years old, mm-hmm. And I jumped right into spirits.
And then you dove in.
Dove in head first.
Dove in.
Yeah. Dove in head first.
Nice.
Like really got deep. And then backed it off and examined what I was doing and started trying to figure out my life. But, yeah, no, I skipped the wine altogether. So, Rocky, after being Jim's whipping boy.
Sure.
Probably for a while. Now you're this thing that you're such a known figure in our community. You travel all over the country because you're the United States.
North America now.
North America. All three, Canada, Mexico, and the United States. Mm-hmm. That's incredible.
Wait, Canada's part of North America now?
Oh, yeah, baby.
Oh,
okay, that's cool. Off.
They prefer to be called America Junior. to all my Canadian listeners. You're just our hat.
Oh.
That's not true. I love Canada. It's awesome.
And maybe wear their underwear.
Oh, zing.
Yeah.
You know. I always thought of Canada was our hat and Mexico was our like goatee.
Oh, nice. Oh. Soul patch.
But you also travel a lot to France, the home of Pierre Ferrand, and then you've got all kinds of juices you get to play with. Speaking of, you're about to pop one right now. What you got in your hand over there? Ooh, there it is. So,
this is our Selection Lausanne. So basically, it's just named after the Angel Share. This is our 30-year-old blend.
30-year-old blend?
Yeah.
So that doesn't do blends,
it's
man.
It's half my age. Yeah. The blends are the best. I don't understand this notion of people thinking that single malt scotches. We're talking about cognac right now, of course, but I don't understand this notion that people think that single malt scotches are the best. I think the blends are where the artistry and the craftsmanship comes together. Wow, that's a big pour, you generous bastard.
Well, you know, I figure we've got a while.
Yeah, it's a belt. I got to go to work after this.
Thank you, sir.
You don't have an unpaid intern bar back?
Man, I wish I did.
He needs an unpaid intern liver.
I need that too.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. So you want to talk about this a little before we start chugging it?
Sure. So, so you know, like I said, 30 years old, all Grand Champagne, Premier Cru, right from the heart of cognac. That's where Grand Champagne is. And yeah.
I was there. I went to Maison Ferrand when I was in France a couple of years ago. And so it's Premier Cru. For the folks out there who aren't wine nerds, including myself, that just means that it's like the best of the soils for growing the grapes.
Yep.
Small regions of Premier Cru, larger regions of the lesser Crus.
Yep.
But on the property there were grapes everywhere, obviously, the vines growing. And also in a corner I saw this little, and it may still be there, you may know what I'm talking about, this little patch of tomato plants.
Oh, yeah, the tomatoes.
And I was like, wait a minute.
Those tomatoes are sacred.
I was like, wait a minute. If these grapes are the best grapes in the world because they're growing in this kind of strained condition, mm-hmm. that they have to struggle to survive, and that makes these grapes amazing because the soil is chalky and
yes.
I was like, then that must hold true for this tomato. It's also a fruit.
Yep.
So I snuck over to the tomato vine. I plucked one off there and I ate it. It was probably one of the best tomatoes.
Oh my God, you were that guy?
Probably one of the best tomatoes I've ever had. I asked.
So I went to...
But I ducked away from the crowd. We were the crowd. I didn't want the whole crowd doing
right.
it.
Right.
But I asked, I was like, hey, can I grab one of those little cherry tomatoes over there?
Yeah, my first time at the Chateau, I also saw the patch of tomatoes. And I also went over. And they're like, yeah, those tomatoes are sacred. That's for the grounds crew.
Yeah.
Like, that's theirs.
Yeah.
No touching. I'm like, okay, got it.
Yeah. I asked permission. I plucked one, a small one. But even the tomato, all of them were a little bit,
they weren't
imperfect.
Yeah.
They were imperfect. They weren't, perfectly round. They were. Mm-hmm. They looked like they struggled to get out of the ground, but they were ripe and plump.
Oh, they were. Yeah, I finally got to try one, and yes, they are. They're amazing.
The best tomatoes are always the ones that they're, forbidden tomatoes.
Of course, right. Well, anything. Prohibit anything. Make it delicious. We learned that lesson pretty hardcore in this country.
And again, it is prohibited, or forbidden fruit in actuality.
Yeah, that is true.
You're very. All right, good. So I interrupted you. Talk more about the juice.
Oh, so. This sees time both in our wet and dry cellars. And, for us, it's...
Speak about the difference between a wet and a dry cellar for the listener.
So the wet and dry cellars are... It's exactly what it sounds like. It's the level of humidity in the cellar. And also, we have in our wet cellar, which is damp and humid and dark, but it's never entirely underground. It's like semi-underground. You don't want them to be completely underground because there still has to be air movement and things like that.
It's like a garden apartment.
Yeah, sure. Let's go with that.
Where Laverne and Shirley.
So New York. Yes. Yeah, exactly.
And so you develop different tones in the wet cellar versus the dry cellar. The dry cellar is, you get spice and you get more of the high tones coming out of the wood. And then in the wet cellar, you're getting those earthy floral tones. Those are the ones that are coming to the fore.
Huh. Neat.
And how do they do that? Do they have like just open exposed water? No,
for the most part, it's just groundwater that's coming up through the ground because it's dirt floor in the wet cellar. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. All right.
So you're not stomping around in water, but everything's damp.
And you lay down some gravel.
Yeah,
chalk, actually from
the soil.
From the soil.
I don't remember that. I guess I have to go back.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, it's been 6 years.
Okay, yeah, definitely. You're overdue.
Oh, there we go. I'll see you there at Southern.
I'm going to go down to the Tulum thing we're going to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
we're going to set up Maison Ferron 2 in Tulum.
Sure.
Yeah.
I hear the growing conditions there are amazing.
Well, just for the chateau, right? At Maison Ferron, there's a chateau, right, where guests can come and stay.
Mm-hmm.
I was invited to come there. I didn't get to stay there. I was already there on another trip, but I was invited to come back and stay there. I haven't taken them up on that yet. But
right. We also have a really big fountain out front.
It's gorgeous.
It's been... we had to put a pool filter and pump on it.
Because people get in it?
Yeah, people, especially the UK bartenders. They were just like piling in. We're like, well, I guess we have a swimming pool now.
I don't think that was done when I was there yet.
No,
but that's
first
brilliant.
First we had to clean it out, and I guess maybe we shouldn't let the dirt pile up in there.
Right.
Delicious. I mean, the Brits didn't care.
You can see it on the label too, right? It's in it's in the little sketch of the Maison,
mm-hmm.
and there's a big fountain right out front. I got some photos already taken that I'll post up on our Speakeasy podcast Instagram. Anyhow, tell us a little bit more about the tasting notes of this, and then we're gonna break away.
So. This is going to be very rounded. It's going to be. Sorry, I'm going to.
Yeah, do your thing.
So at 30, at 30 years, a lot of the floral tones have calmed down. It's not as bright and up front in your face. I get some more tones that I would think of as being really whiskey friendly. For especially people who like American whiskey, I started to get more of that. The caramel tones, the vanillins are really starting to actually come out.
It's funny. It's like it's like a soft Blenheim. Mm-hmm. It's like a little wheat, whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. I don't think I've noticed that before.
Yeah, I mean, it's things that I've been thinking of because. I mean, previously it's always been it's all about the grapes, and we only talk about the grapes and what do grapes do. But at the same time, it's still a spirit. It's still aged in wood, And so, you know, what are the other similarities that it has with other spirits? Because, you know, a lot of what I need to do is try and expand other people, you know, some people's minds in terms of, I know you really love whiskey, but, you know, you should really give this a whirl. Like, we've only been making it for, you know, a couple hundred years.
Right.
You know.
It's the same thing also with cognac drinkers. They may have only had one style or two different brands or something. That this is already like a departure for them.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I find it's a real interesting thing about the imbiber that's not true of the consumer, right? People who eat food, mm-hmm. which is all of us. No one ever... Well, not no one. There's going to be that one asshole that's going to call in and say, well, I do that. No one ever says to themselves, you know what? I don't care if it's winter or summer. I don't care if it's my birthday or New Year's Eve. I don't care what it is. I drink Dewars on the Rocks. That's my thing. People do that.
Yes.
What they don't do is say, I don't care if it's winter or summer or my anniversary or 4th of July. I only eat grilled cheese sandwiches and french fries.
Right.
Why is that? Why do people relegate themselves to one drink?
They do that, but they're 6 years old. So, exactly. I mean,
you grow out of it.
Absolutely happens, yeah. No, ketchup is on everything. Yes, 100%. Yeah.
You grow out of it. Yeah. All right, we're going to come right back after some words from our sponsors and keep talking to Rocky and Donnie about, about everything. Fuck it.
Life.
Let's do it.
We'll be right back.
42, right? Mm-hmm.
Don't go in for understanding when you are away. Can't use my heart to think away the time. In my room I will await you, and so soon I will relate you. And tie your finger right on up to mine. Sweet Josephine, you live in my dream. Sleep right by my...
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Is this the only thing we're tasting?
And we are back.
Yep. Okay.
Welcome back to the studio with on the Speakeasy with Rocky and Donnie. We're talking about cognac and unlimited liabilities and boxes of things getting mailed to your home. And whatever. We're talking about everything. Being 42, which I'll be 42.
Awesome.
6 years ago.
you'll get there, man. You'll get there.
Next year?
Yeah. If I may, while we still have something delightful in our glasses, today is an old friend of mine's birthday.
Oh, who's that?
Daniel Hyatt, who passed away this year.
Oh,
yeah.
And ironically, I've been thinking about him the last couple of days. And on my way here, I'm on the train, and this woman passes by me, and I'm like, that looks just like this woman that used to work for Danny back in the day. And then, and I've been friends with since, but I'm like, that's interesting. So just on a whim, I take out my phone and I go to text her, and I see that the like two texts ago from like maybe a few months ago after he passed away, she was like, I think I'm going to move back to New York. So I text her. I'm like, so did you move to New York? And then I hear her laughing. It was in fact her. And we spent our train ride on the way here.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
So I was just like, yeah. Fucking Daniel
Serendipity.
Hyatt. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm sure that he arranged it.
Yeah, yeah.
For sure.
Well,
yeah. So I just wanted to raise our glasses
yeah,
to
cheers
him.
Cheers to that.
Give him a little toast.
Yeah, indeed. Danny.
Cheers, guys. Bing, bing.
Cheers.
Oh, that is delightful. Thank
so
you.
So, Donnie, let's talk about unlimited liability. Well, let's talk about your bar. Yeah. Talk about Academia right quick.
Academia is... What's going on there? Is like a fun downtown Austin neighborhood bar. We're in the Warehouse District. On 4th between Lavaca and Colorado. And it's one of those places where people ask, like, you know, what's the theme? And, you know, technically, like, our theme is, you know, like the Ivy League of drinking. Like, you come in and you want to learn, and no one's going to talk to you about that stuff unless you really want to talk about it. It's not like a nerd bar. It's a super fun downtown bar.
I'm very well known for the phrase, there's no better place to get an education than at a bar.
For sure. Yeah.
And that education can be on any subject.
Mm-hmm.
You can get taught some manners.
Yes.
Or you can learn about law. You can learn about politics.
The problem is that all the things that you're certainly teaching booze. People, you're completely unlicensed. But
Of course. Well, I'm not saying that the teacher is me or the bartender. You can learn that shit just by being at a bar.
That is true.
You can get some manners taught to you pretty quickly.
Jabril Donahue and I... he and I are notorious for engaging in lectures on maritime history of the Napoleonic Wars.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's very specific.
Yeah, but so
really, you can't drill that down a little bit more.
If I'm a bystander, I'm going to learn something from you.
Right.
Anyway, so academia, you're learning some stuff.
So we wanted to create that environment where people, our cocktail stations are like teaching stations. If either of you were to go and get behind the bar right now, it would take you about 30 seconds to figure out where everything is and run a shift. So we really wanted to do it like on either side of the bar. It's a great place to go and like learn awesome. And to teach and everything. Mm. And we set it up where we have four stations, long bar, and then behind back away from the actual bar seats, we have long tables where people can actually sit facing the bar and each other. So it's all about like gathering, like having a gathering space. But when people ask like, what's the theme of the bar? I'm like, the theme is a great neighborhood bar that happens to have great food and cocktails, you know, like we don't want it to have, it's like, it's not a speakeasy theme. It's not a rock and roll theme. It's not it's just like a great bar to come and hang out. And we had like, it was crazy. We had regulars in our first 10 days of business. We had like these two girls, one that works nearby and one lives nearby that are friends, and they'll meet up three times a week and come to academia. And we would see, you know, between like 11 and close every day, other bar owners, other restaurant owners, not only from the area, but from around, who had heard good things, and they come in for the service.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah. It's, I love it. It's like the most, it's the biggest honor seeing someone who comes from a place that I really admire.
Come to your
that
place.
Come in and they're like, we love your bar.
That's awesome.
It's amazing. Yeah.
So Austin, get yourself over to academia.
Please.
Now let's talk about, unlimited liabilities. What all, you got your finger in a lot of pies with that company. Talk about your favorite couple.
So, favorite couple fingers or favorite couple pies?
A little bit of both.
Okay, great.
Super fan of my thumbs.
Yeah, exactly.
They're not fingers, they're thumbs.
It's turning. This is taking a turn. So, Russell Davis started this, founded the company at the same time that... actually, I don't know. I think it was 2012 or 2013, but got really busy with the show and everything like that. And then
he was on Bar Rescue.
Yeah, the first three seasons were like mostly him. It felt like there was a lot of Russell on those shows, and was doing a lot of like side projects and wanted to have like a business to do that on the side. And we just got to chatting one day. We've been friends for years. He worked for my friend Rob in Austin, and that's how I met him before he even moved to San Francisco. And he was like, you know, how would you like to do some projects together? And we just found that it was very easy to work together. It's sometimes very yin yang, but in a way that is like a pretty great flow. So, you know, anyone that knows him well is just like, oh yeah, no, I can totally see that working.
Yeah.
You know, and it's been really fun. So he and I are partners in the bar, along with our GM and with Rob. And we work on a bunch of different projects right now. We're actually opening a place in San Jose, Costa Rica. That
if I think unpaid intern bar back. I'm available for.
We will most likely be looking for a lot of unpaid interns. So yeah, absolutely.
Aren't there paid interns?
Especially smart ones. Yeah.
I don't know.
No, we just. It's really, we have a very fun creative process where we get to, you know, dive into things, and go very crazy with it and then pull it back to like reality. I'm much more of an execution person.
Right.
I really want to make sure what we can do is done well and quickly and efficiently. But without losing the creative. And Russell's like, I mean, he's crazy creative. He'll come up with all kinds of things. So it's very fun to like riff back and forth with him, and we get a lot accomplished that way. And then the other thing that you mentioned was Shaker and Spoon, which we're partners in Shaker and Spoon. And
I was a part of that before.
Yeah.
I'm going to be a part of that again.
And such a great, and that was such a great box too. So it's a subscription cocktail kit that comes with everything but the booze and the tools. So literally in it, there are three cocktails from three bartenders from around the world. And it'll be whatever base spirit for that particular month. So yours was
Amaro.
Was the first one that was kind of a departure. So it wasn't just like Blanco tequila or you know, American gin, or, you know, like it was Amaro. And that, I mean, it such a sweeping wide range of different, you know, flavors and textures and bitterness, really. And the three were Jägermeister, Fernet Branca, and Averna.
Yeah.
And so, sorry, that was distracting. And they're so different from each other. So to make the goal is to have these three cocktails and be able to make them with one 750. So whatever bottle you buy, whatever you decide with the three bartenders recommend, you make all the drinks with that. So there's a dozen drinks in this little box. Each three you can make four times each.
And it's adorable. Comes with everything. Comes with house made ingredients. Came with citrus. You know, a couple of lemons to do twists.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty incredible.
Yeah, super fun. So, like, no pasteurized juices or anything like that. It's all, like, whole lemons, whole oranges. And then, yeah, a bunch of bitters and tinctures and house-made syrups and other things.
Mine had my house-made hot cocoa mix.
Which was very good. And yours was Fernet.
Yeah, I picked the hardest one.
Right.
I figured I'm the guy who's going to pick the hard one.
Well, yes and no, because you picked the one that was, like, let's say somebody makes your drink with Jägermeister. So yeah, you have that bitter, but it's definitely going to be a little bit on the sweeter side.
Yeah.
So it was the only time that we really had to explain to people, like, yes, you can do this, but keep in mind, maybe you want to pull a little bit back on the simple.
Oh, sure. Right.
So, but it was great. Like at that point, we were a couple years in and people were much better at those kinds of nuances.
Sure.
And we got a lot of positive, way more positive feedback on that than I thought we would.
Yeah, I was asked by the team, and I was like, "You sure you want to do an Amaro box? That's a tough sell."
Yeah, it was.
I had an Amaro bar. It's a tough sell. Yeah. I live it.
It was so great that we actually had a couple of you know, bitters and Amaro suppliers come and say, like, "Hey, can we do like an actual a limited time box just for this?"
Neat.
Because they saw that it actually worked. But you'd be surprised which ones have been, like, the Brandy one was the most successful one. It was nuts. Wow. Yeah, I thought, and we did, like, we actually did Ferrant. We did the Ambra, and we did a Brandy, a cognac, and then an American Brandy. Yeah. So it was really, really interesting.
Super fun. Shaker and Spoon subscription cocktail boxes. You should go check it out. To the listener, of course. No, I had fun doing it, and I'm doing another one.
Yeah.
And your next one, it's coming out soon. And it's going to be a book box, right? So
yes.
It'll be three different drinks from three different books, including my book. And there's a golden ticket, or two. There's two golden tickets.
Three.
Three.
Mm-hmm.
And you can win a copy of my book if you get that golden ticket in.
Yeah,
cool. A signed copy, by the way. I'll sign it and, you know, personalize it to the winner.
Totally. He'll draw a little smiley face. This is one of the more interesting ones that I think that we've done. And it all started from Maggie Hoffman's book, which is One Bottle Cocktails.
Yep, we had her on the show. She was a great guest.
So great, yeah. And conceptually, it fits very well with Shaker and Spoon, because the whole thing is, like, you have these 12 drinks that you're going to make with 1750 at about a 2 ounce pour each. Boom. That gives you, like, almost an entire bottle will make all 12 of those drinks.
Yep.
And so, you know, all you need is these other ingredients and the bottle, and you're golden. So it was interesting to get into that conversation, because the stuff that people come up with varies. Sometimes it's really complicated. Sometimes it's very simple. But if you think about it, and the kind of drinks that I like are usually multi-spirit drinks. So to come up with a drink that's not all citrus or all sweet or just really basic and still only have one spirit in it, it's a challenge.
Yeah, well, spoiler alert, next year I'm involved in one of the boxes where I'm supposed to make a Negroni with only gin. Is that too much of a spoiler?
No.
Okay,
you're prepping them for next June.
That's a ways away.
Yeah, but it's going to be really, this one's going to be very cool. And Misty and Kitty's book is incredible. And of course, Maggie's book. And so they're paired not only with the books, but with a cocktail from each of these books. And it's also a gin box. So at the very minimum, you can at least get a gin and make all three of the drinks.
Yeah.
Technically all 12 of the drinks, but yes.
Pretty rad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rocky, how long are you going to be in New York City?
I'm actually going to be here till Monday because...
Wow. It's like you live here.
I know. because, you know, not only am I here for Brandy Week, but then it's New York Rum Fest on Saturday.
Mm. Whoa, I kind of forgot.
Yeah.
Because I'm drinking cognac and beer. I'm having beer too.
Perfect pairing.
Brandy Week. Yes. Let's talk about that because we're kind of right in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
How's it going? What is it? What can the listener do to check it out?
So you can go to brandyweek.com and they've got the full schedule of events there. There's been a couple of tastings, a couple of seminars already. There's some more coming up. And Sunday, I believe, is the big educational day that is coming up.
When is yours? You have a seminar or something, right? Tasting?
It's actually where we did some tastings already, but most of the seminars are actually just purely about the category. It's not really brand specific, which is actually kind of awesome because...
Right, it's Brandy Week. It's not Maison Ferrand Week.
Right. I mean, you know, but it's...
Which is great. Yeah. A high tide raises all boats.
Absolutely. Mm. And you know, I mean, brandy is really such a broad subject that, like, I mean, you know, trying to like, compartmentalize it is really tough. And as well, I always feel like what's strange is, you know, in the last few years, like, you know, like agave has gotten really popular and we're like, oh yeah, you know, we're all into that. Or, you know, or we've like gotten a lot more into rums, you know, and there's a lot of knowledge that's been passed around, but brandy in a lot of ways is still kind of unknown. It's like, you know, it's still like here be dragons territory for a lot of people. And
sure, which is shocking given its history, how long it's
right,
been around.
You know, and, you know, just...
Fruit ferments, then you had wine, then you burnt that wine and you made brandy. Like, right. It's been around the longest.
Yeah, and it's, you know, just... And also just so many types of brandy. You know, Calvados, Cognac, Armagnac, you know, Spanish brandies. I mean, American brandies, just on and on and on and on. So...
You're a fine girl.
So Brandy Week, there's plenty of seminars and plenty of things to do. It's brandyweek.com, you said?
Yes.
And we still got several days of that to go. So to the listeners that are listening live, please check out some Brandy Week events here in New York. But it's also happening in other cities, too, at the same time, right?
There's a couple other events, but it's mostly based around New York.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So I thought I saw something about Chicago with...
I think there's a couple.
Oh, so they're doing it simultaneously.
I thought I saw cities? Something with Kelly Thorne in Chicago.
Yeah, she's doing some classes.
Oh, that's cool.
Out there, I mean, and Kelly's. If you're in Chicago, like, go see Kelly because she's an amazing educator.
Yeah,
she's actually the one that did the brandy box with Ferrand.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So many connections on this show.
It's crazy, booze and Jews, man. 2 degrees. 2 degrees.
Okay, so Brandy Week we're done with, and then you're staying here for
New York Rum Fest.
Rum Fest.
Yeah.
What the hell is that?
So that's on Saturday. That's basically, you know, there's gonna be some classes, but mostly it's about, you know, coming in and tasting and, you know, and learning about also, you know, the breadth of rum. I mean, rum may all be made from sugar, but of some sort, but they're is wildly different from one end to the other.
Oh, I think it's the broadest and most cavalier category of all, right? Pretty much every equatorial nation makes the stuff,
right?
And they have their own rules.
And some non-equatorial,
if they have their own rules, if they have rules at all,
right?
Right. So it's a very difficult category,
right? And that's always one of those things too. Is like, you know, there's always a lot of like, oh, you know, rum doesn't have rules. Like, no, rum has lots of rules. It just depends on if the country that you're producing it has decided to have rules.
Mm. Or to follow them, yeah.
Or there's that too.
Right. Like, I think rum has probably the most rules, but it's they're separate from island to island, from nation to nation. And and then even within those, they're like, I'm not following the rules.
It's
anyway.
One of the things that makes it one of the more interesting categories. Mm-hmm. Because
agreed.
Like, it varies so very much depending on denomination of origin and soil.
I've gotten a small amount of flack about my book kind of glossing over rum, but I even say in the rum chapter... probably misquote myself. I say like, "Yo ho ho! Here's my chapter about rum, but I'm kind of going to gloss over it because it deserves its own book."
Yes.
Right. So I just kind of touch it.
I'm paraphrasing myself here,
but right. when I'm you know, I left room for a second book. Well, and you know, I mean, what I did is leave room for a second book.
Right.
Yes.
Yes. Well, you always have to have room for that. Leave them wanting more.
And then I write a prequel.
Right.
Nice.
And
yeah,
you know,
those always work out.
And there's always, you know, there's always. I mean, Wayne Curtis put out the second edition of, you know, In a Bottle of Rum.
Oh yeah, man.
Yeah. So, I mean, I looked at that. And like, that was. I asked him like, Do I actually need to buy a new copy of this second edition? Or
wait a second. You asked the author, do I need to buy
another
copy?
Of course he said yes.
He's going to be like, nah, you're good.
He said, Rocky, you need to buy several copies and give them to your team.
Yeah.
This is true. And this is exactly what happened.
Yeah.
She's smart. So is that a centrally located thing, Rum Fest?
Yes. It's going to be at SOB's.
SOB. It's on Varick, you said?
Yeah, on Varick, yeah. And that's basically all day on Saturday.
That's fun.
Cool. And you'll be there with Plantation.
Yep, we'll be there with Plantation Rum.
Because I think maybe the listener doesn't recognize that Maison Ferrand, of course, is the big cognac house, but they also are Plantation Rums.
Mm-hmm.
As well as Citadel Gins.
Yep, and Mathilde Liqueurs and our dry Curacao. And, I mean, you know, Daron Calvados and Cerbois Armagnac. I mean, the list goes on.
Yeah.
You just have to say it with a French accent.
Plantation.
Plantation, yeah. Well, and that's always the funny thing. So Guillaume, you know, who runs the Americas for Maison Ferrand, he's always like, you know, I'm just gonna stop hiring French guys. I'm done. Like, I was like, no. We're a cognac house.
Yeah.
I need someone with a French accent to trot out every now and then, and you don't want to hear mine because it's or as you would say, exacrab.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. So Saturday Rum Fest all day long at SOB on Varick Street. I'll be bartending Saturday night, as always, at Windmill, my newest bar, which is open now 44 days, 45 days.
Mazel tov.
Thank you. And Windmill, we talked about it off the air, Rocky. Windmill's my sort of homage to France, mm-hmm. right? It's a French-inspired bar. We've got plenty of cognac, Calvados, Pinot de Chiron, Chartreuse.
Sounds like the perfect place to go during Brandy Week.
Rums with an H. It sounds like a perfect place to go for Brandy Week and Rum Fest. I wish I'd have known about these things.
Yeah. Do you have like a bunch of like Genevers in there too?
I don't have
Are we just doing French windmills?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, just French windmill. Well, my partner's name is Pierre Moulin, which means mill or windmill.
Well, there you go.
Peter Windmill is his American name. So I just like the name.
Wow, you know,
that's strong.
Yeah, yes. I just like the name. It was, you know, our friends over at Nama Tamir over there at Lighthouse. Just very iconic name.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were talking about this place, we didn't really have a name. And I was just like, why don't we just call it after you? Why don't we just call it the Windmill? And then we dropped the so it's just Windmill.
Love it.
I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like it has an evocative nature, just being an iconic thing. Anyway, a little Frenchy bar. So Brandy Week is wrapping up, and Rum Fest is all day that day. Afterwards, come over to Windmill and check me out. I'll be serving some drinks that involve both those things.
That sounds like a perfect plan.
Yeah. It kind of coincides with both.
Do you have a drink called Don Quixote? Or
no.
Not yet.
Not yet. Soon.
Okay. On the 50th day.
Yes. Yeah, we'll get there.
I always wanted to do a drink competition, and I gave this idea to Don Q, you know. It's like, look, you're a totally different style of rum, so I'm okay with giving this one. But I wanted to do a drink competition where you had to sing I, Don Quixote, while making a drink.
Sure.
And even better if you can sing both Don Quixote and Sancho Panza's part yourself.
Yeah, extra points.
Yes. I mean, you can have an assistant, another unpaid intern barback.
Yeah, intern barback.
Or have a sweet drink called Dulcinea, you know?
Yes.
There's a lot of options. A lot of options.
Yeah. There's no end in sight to how we could cram puns and literary references onto the menus of bars.
That is true.
Yes.
I saw that show with my folks years ago. I think it was like in high school. With Raul Julia and Sheena Easton.
Wow.
It was amazing.
Holy crap.
Yeah. At the Orange County Performing Arts Theater, I might
right.
add that.
As a high school student, did you have a full appreciation of it, or do you appreciate it years later?
No, I did at the time.
Yeah.
This was like, I think, right pre like Adam's Family, Raul Julia, but my folks used to play that kind of stuff all the time, so I already knew all the songs and stuff, so it was kind of fun. And then I was a huge James Bond fan, and Sheena Easton did for Your Eyes Only.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I mean,
pretty much one of the greatest like Bond theme songs.
Pretty much, it's up there. I mean, listen, it's no Duran Duran, but what are you gonna do?
Hey, you know,
what are you gonna do? What is?
This is true.
Yeah,
I mean, but Raul Julia, every time he comes up, I always think about how his last movie was Street Fighter, and you're just like,
oh, really?
Yeah, you're just like, like on, you know, for like ways for an actor to go out, you're just like.
Right.
Listen, I'm not an actor. So if I were in a film and it was my one and only film and it was with Jean-Claude Van Damme, I'd be pretty stoked.
True.
But if I were Raul Julia, I'd be like, damn it. That was my last film.
Right.
Yeah.
This is where it ends.
Sorry, Jean-Claude. I know that you listen to the show religiously, and I really apologize for it.
Fan.
I love Belgium. I'll see you soon.
He is a big fan.
Yeah.
Guys, you have any social media you want to plug before I wrap us up?
You know, you can follow my antics on Twitter and Instagram.
Antics. Love it.
Yeah, sure. We'll call them antics. Mm-hmm. You know, occasional
shenanigans.
Rants. Shenanigans, rants, whatever, random stuff. You know, at Rock Doggy Dog. It's just uniform across them all.
Rock Doggy Dog on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Grindr, Thrinder. You're on them all.
What's Thrinder?
It is exactly what you think it is.
Fantastic. Okay. I don't. That's fine. Thrinder?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, my God. For the folks at home, that was really visual. Anyway.
I just held up three fingers. Thrinder. Three or more. Fantastic. How about you, Donnie?
My stuff is all different. So just
name the one you want the most.
Check out Academia Austin and a project that we're actually working on right now. When you were talking about like the history of Brandy, it immediately made me think of Unaver, actually, which is a project that we're working on with the EU to promote education of the category in the US for the next 3 years.
Are you talking to Philip Duff about this?
Philip Duff is aware of it, and in fact, the distillery where he's making his, which is Herman Jansen, actually has the Notaris as part of this project. So although it is not brand affiliated, there are brands that are part of the project, but there are these really incredible category ambassadors around the country, seven cities, well, four
Duff
states.
Duff is a champion for the category.
He's... Yeah. Oh yeah. And his product, the funny thing is, like, his product, if you were to put it in the lineup with the other ones that are part of the project, still fills another gap that's not there. So for those who, you know, maybe have only been familiar with Bowles for the past 10 years, which still has its place right smack dab in the middle of that lineup. It's shocking like how different these things are and how little everyone knows, including myself, about Unaver. In fact, there's one that is like so cognac-y. And it, like, if you pop it into cognac cocktails, you're like, this is...
I mean, wouldn't be surprised just because, like, just the sheer amount of cognac that was exported to Holland, you know, like back in the day.
Right, and the flavor profile they're looking for. And they're now doing like 17-year aged malt spirit and stuff like that. It's really incredible. So, you know, if you're in L.A., Chicago, San Francisco, New York, Dallas, or Houston, or Miami, those are the cities. And you should, you know, see if you can get one of the trainings. It's really incredible. They're doing an amazing job.
Is there a website or what?
It's called Genevers of Europe, but, you know, you can hit me up either at Academia Austin or at D Ronen, D-R-O-N-E-N, and I will connect you with those folks. They're pretty great.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Upcoming shows include, but aren't limited to, we got Kevin Berry from Three Dots and a Dash coming next week. The following week, we got Paul Finn. He's going to talk to us about hospitality and healthcare. Johnny Schuler of Caravedo Pisco. Possibly with Francine Cohen, going to sit in on that one. And then a lot of weird stuff going on for me. I'll be in Chicago doing a thing with Amaro Montenegro at Best Intentions, book signing, and the Vero Bartender Competition I'll be a judge of. I'll be in Portland for Portland Cocktail Week. I'm going to be the Dean of Hospitality and Bartending. Seems like a shock to ask me to do that.
Dean of Students.
Not too long after that, Dean of Students. Not too long after that, we got Jillian Vose. She's going to come on and talk about her book, With the Dead Rabbit, that's coming out. So lots of cool stuff. Also, later next month, I'm going to be teaching a class at Liquor Lab right here in New York City, where we're going to do four cocktails and different techniques right out of my book. And then every person who comes to the class will get to make those drinks with me. We'll have some snacks in between and some Q&A, and then everybody gets to walk out with a copy of the book as well. So lots of cool things going on. Please follow us at Speakeasy Podcast on Instagram. I'll post some photos from today's show, links to all these things, and you can ask us questions there for any of the upcoming shows. Damon will be back next week for sure. Now that he lives on the opposite coast, we'll be doing a lot more recorded episodes and sort of man-on-the-street interviews. So stay tuned for that new style of content coming from us here at the Speakeasy. Tune into Heritage Radio Network, or rather log into heritageradionetwork.org. Click on the beating heart to donate to keep shows like this one and many others on the air. And thanks for listening. Cheers, guys.
Thank you.
Cheers.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues that sound. It's gonna get you sun in the air.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.